Hi, this is Santi Tosino, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Series 4, Episode 32 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, Lawrence Landry, Jim Harley this week. It's nearly the end of the season, but guys and girls, we're nearly there. It's been a long old season, and after about week six, it's been pretty awful. To sum that up, actually, we've just been discussing what we're consuming in terms of our beverage this evening as we're recording this. Jim, do you want to give us your tipple?
I've got a Kraken Orange and Lime Sour by Tenby Brewing Company.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping the Murray Mint that I had far, far too soon ago gets washed away really quickly and I can concentrate on the beer because at the moment it's a bit of a taste sensation.
Lawrence?
I'm having a discount shop version of French vodka, their version of it, which
is it like a beige albatross or something?
Yeah, it's one of those where you don't bother going to buy Grey Goose anymore because you can get it for 15 quid in Lidl.
Yes,
and it's just as good. I've got that in a pint glass, a pint of vodka and tonic basically with ice.
I think that sums up how we feel about
this season.
Yeah. So anyway, going on to this season and what we're going to talk about in this pod, we will talk about.
What are you drinking, Ed?
I'm going to be drinking a pint of Guinness in a minute, maybe two. It is a Sunday night after all. Yeah. So we're going to be talking about the Gloucester Sale game. And again, as always, we talk about the positives as well as the negatives. And there were a lot of positives I felt on Saturday, despite the result. We'll talk about Billy and Ben, who are obviously finishing their careers with Gloucester next weekend. As we also have found out, Geordie Reid, Jake Pelledri's leaving, and a few others, I believe, as well, if we go down the list. We'll also talk about social media and the dangers of it, shall we say. So obviously we know that Jack Nowell got a fine. A fairly chunky fine when you consider...
Chunky fine. That's a football fine, not a rugby fine.
Yeah, and he's not on footballer's wages. And whether we feel that's appropriate and proportionate. Also, the other side of social media and what players have got to deal with from fans, or as you say, fans, there's a lot of heavy lifting in that word going on there. They're not fans. They're just dickheads. And I'm more than happy to say that out loud. Anyway, and then finally, we'll talk about the semi-finals because they now are settled. With our defeat to Sale and also other results this weekend. So that's pretty much the pod, plus anything else you guys want to chat about. So we'll start off, though, with the Gloucester Sale game. Jim, I'll let you start this week because you were on the end last time. So your views, go however you want to go, mate, and then I'll let us jump in.
First off, I'm not aware that Sale normally have huge amounts of travelling support, and there was a lot. Coming in, kind of went through the tump ends to get to the shed, and a couple of big groups wearing their Sale blue and white Santa hats, one lot in camo and another lot just heavy drinking as most touring sites do. Seemed to be quite a few people on tour, like rugby groups and stuff like that. And yeah, big crowds of Sale supporters sort of in the stands. Made for a really good atmosphere, you know, just over 12,500. I was expecting it to be less than that, to be honest. I mean, I know it's our final home game of the season, but I could have appreciated it being poorer in number just based on previous standards of games. So that was good. And I tell you, the first half, it was an absolute humdinger. Really, really good defence from both sides. Gloucester just seemed to have this knack of running into contact without any momentum. We've had it all season. And against a side that's defensively as strong as Sale, you ain't going to break the line by catching ball standing still and running into, you know, the likes of Tuilagi. So I think that's something that definitely needs to get looked at next season. If there was an award for having the most dominant collisions whilst having received the ball standing still, then we'd probably be top of that chart. But I don't think anyone rates that metric.
It's not a statistic you necessarily see on a regular basis now.
No, but my God, it's just like all day, every day, it seems to be what we do. And that's probably why the likes of Ackerman have, you know, performed so well for us, because he has that ability. But yeah, I just thought we had some moments of brilliance, a couple of really good breaks. I mean, the tackle on Zamit in the first half to just about get his toe into touch was superb tackle, because I think, you know, every man and his dog thought that that was a try. You could probably say the same at the other end, you know, in the opposite corner in the second half was similar, and Zamit just dived a bit better. I think
that was. I was going to say. Do you think that the instance in the first half actually gave him a different sort of viewpoint on how he went for the second one? I felt that if he'd on a normal rugby pitch, I think if he'd slid in the first half, he would have scored no problem at all. But maybe in the back of his head,
maybe a penalty try with the yellow card.
But in the back of his mind, I wonder whether that artificial surface does play in their heads. They don't really want to be sliding on it.
Yeah, well, May wears skin bottoms, doesn't he? But
Zamit doesn't. No.
I was quite intrigued by what your thoughts would be on this, Ed, actually, because where I was sat in the grandstand up in Block N, by where the coaches are, it almost felt as though Lewis didn't really go for it flat out, and there was a bit of bravado there, and I'm going to score from here, and a little bit of ego got in the way, perhaps. Whereas with the second one, having got caught out the first time, there was no way he was going to allow himself to get caught again. And he really sort of pinned his ears back and went for it, and didn't seem as though he went flat out for the corner. And he certainly didn't really kick his heels up in the air. He needs to have a quick word with the Freddie Clark on how to finish those ones.
To be fair, I know what you mean, though. And Jim, I'll let you come back on this one in a second. But my view, because I was a little bit closer, as you know, to where you sit. And I thought, from my view, he was in all day long. And I do think if he'd actually, on a normal rugby pitch where you would normally slide in that situation, I think he would have scored. And it felt maybe not bravado, but maybe a bit of an assumption that he was in, he'd got the pace. I would say Louis Rees-Samit jogging is quicker than most people who can speak.
Oh, God,
I don't know. But I definitely think that it influenced the second try, shall we say, in the second half.
The pitch was pretty dry, wasn't it, for the first half. And then he potentially could have gone for the slide in the second half, because I think the plastic was wetter. So that was an option. But I think he dived a bit better. And kept his feet in the air. But
it was
a great finish. And actually, you know, the first one, I mean, he was carrying a bit of a dead leg, I think, after that.
One thing I would say also is that the pass to him was
quite... I'm not sure exactly what happened. He slid off, didn't he, and hit the hoardings.
He got a thump, yeah. But the one thing I would say, the pass to him from Carreras, I'm not blaming Carreras. He had to get it away quick, but it did stop Louis, so he had to kind of generate the pace all himself rather than running onto it. Where if it had been in front of him and be flatter, he would have scored with no problem.
I think we also need to give credit to the Sale defender.
Oh yes, yeah, so superb tackle.
They were all going around giving him the high fives and celebrating with him. And I was like, well, what's he done? Has he scored it himself or what? And then when you saw the replay, I was like, oh God. And also, I think for as much as I just was curious as to what your feelings were, whether it was the angle that I was sat at made it look like perhaps he didn't go flat out for the corner or not. And that's why I asked the question, because I don't want to come across as saying and critical on it. Well, what I will turn around and say is we have to doff our caps to that Sale defender. He never gave up, and he really put a decent hit in to stop the try there.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's a definition of try saver, isn't it? The majority of people in that stadium thought that the try had already been scored as soon as Zamit got it in his hands.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of just shows that Sale are they're the best team in the league, I think, for defence in that kind of situation. They really do never give up. They've got a very, very strong ethos in that kind of area. Sanderson, you know, demands that kind of D. And And just that, obviously, that was a 5-7 point turnaround, not getting those. But just a couple of other, I mean, we keep harping on about it, game management. Couple of pretty simple three-pointers, certainly in the first half.
Yeah, the one in front of the post, wasn't it?
And yeah. I was like, just go for it. I saw today that Saracens were behind. I think they were 10-3 behind. They had a
10-0 at one point, weren't they?
Yeah, they had a simple three-pointer in front of the post. They went, yep, we're not going to try and bring it level. We're just going to get the three because it's there for the taking. And then they got those, and then they got another seven, you know, in the next couple of minutes. And I just think that's where we should be with some of our decision-making, because the last 3-4 minutes of the game was just calamity, where, you know, whoever didn't bring, I think it was 2.5 minutes or there ago, the tee should have been run on at that point.
Yeah, almost the opposite of last week.
kick the goal, because it's an easy kick. You've got all the time in the world. And then you get a good minute and a half to go for the win. You've already got the bonus point and you go for the win. And it ended up being same as last week. And, you know, we ended up being lucky, really, to get that try and bonus point right at the death. And it shouldn't have been like that. It should have been far, far better controlled.
Yeah, I'm actually just looking again at the replay of that, of the try-saving tackle.
You think it should be a yellow card?
No, I'm looking at it now, and it's interesting. One, there is an argument that the ball was... is it simultaneous, or
I think in rugby union, simultaneous means you go with a defender.
Right.
I think
in rugby league it's the other way. And I have to be honest, Loz, I know what you're saying now in terms of the way he runs in. I think he almost thinks I'm in. Whereas if he just put even a half, like another step in, or half a little bit more pace in, he would have scored. Yeah, incredible defense, fair play to him. Jim, in terms of the second half, I felt that there was the 10 minutes, I think, after they scored their penalty to go in front. That, for me, was the difference across the whole game overall, just the management that Sale put in. And we talk about game management again, but I'll take your views on that, and Loz, I'll let you come in then as well and talk about.
Yeah, I mean,
areas.
They seem to just control possession. You know, almost. There was quite a bit of kicking earlier to that, and then that period they just seemed to be quite happy to go through phases and sort of frustrate us a little bit, Yeah, it's annoying, because when we had the ball and we actually tried to play some rugby, we cut them apart. I mean, we had the break from Atkinson to kind of go through the middle, because he dummied the play that gets done every 5 minutes, the kind of out to the second wave, dummied that and ghosted through. All those sorts of plays where we've just put it through hands really quick and got around the rush defence, all those plays were fantastic.
Yeah.
And we had that period where we really needed another one of those, and it just didn't come. Sale just bossed the game. They bossed the game line, and the physicality was maintained. And I think, kind of just frustrated Gloucester. In a way, Gloucester have kind of got to that situation now where they're used to it. They're used to losing. And you kind of almost at the end of the game, and this is what frustrates me. At the end of the game, they're really happy to get that losing bonus point.
Yeah.
And everyone in the stand is like, no, you should not be pleased that you've lost a game that you could could so easily have won. Something that we are quite good at saying that.
Yeah. Loz, your thoughts, mate?
The thing is, we're either too... I think Snowy's touched on this before. We're either too structured, or we're not structured enough. Then it's just complete and utter gun-ho and shovel it throw it around like madmen. So we're either too structured where we're two phases and kick. You usually take it just outside the 22 so we can't kick the touch. And then and everyone knows what's coming because it's always the same no matter pretty much where we are between our try line and they're probably 15 meters from their 22 or something like that, between the so 5 meters it past their 10 meter line, something like that. They know that there's going to be a box kick coming after a couple of phases of taking it up, usually. Or we go this complete gung-ho, wild, throwing it around, trying to run it from everywhere. And if the times when we find the happy medium of the two, we actually look a half-decent side. And that's probably what makes it so infuriating. That's what's happened this season.
Yeah.
Because when we've played rugby and we've played it at the right, we've always said there's a time and a place of kicking and good kicking. But we've been kicking it too much and we need to play a bit more rugby. But when we've played that rugby, we have looked a decent side. And so we should with the players we've got in our team. Saturday, we seem to be at the start sale. I texted very early in our group chat saying we could get stuffed here because we couldn't lay a finger on them. They were on the ball, I would say.
No,
obviously, we laid fingers on them. For the first 10 minutes, they looked like, and they didn't score. Credit to our players because we kept them out. And we grew into the game after that. I then quickly put, oh, I might be wrong on this one. And it was a close game, as we know. But we do like to start with the kicking game. Okay, I suppose there's that was an element. But then we did very much go straight into more of the playing the rugby game that we've been doing. And we looked a decent side on it, as I said. The second half, what worries me is the physicality. We then got a bit bullied up front again, much in the same way as we did against Bath. It's been a long season for our pack, it looks, because certainly late on, we really did start to suffer. I want to try and give a few positives because there were some good positives out there. George McGuigan, fair play to him for having had the layoff that he had. He looked like he hadn't missed the match the way he came back into that game.
Yeah,
he
was right up to speed.
But one thing I would say is that one of the players who's been an absolute revelation for us this season has been Seb Blake. He looks the sort of player who needs to start and not come off the bench because his arrows were all over the place when he came. Superb all season that he's played since our players have had the injury. But he couldn't hit the proverbial cow's ass with a banjo when he came on for the first couple of line-outs. Bless him. And I don't mean that in a negative sort of way. I'm sure people will say, oh, I'm ripping him up. I don't mean it that way. Yeah, McGuigan
was not up to his standards, was he?
No, because he's been a standout player for us since he's come into the side, and he didn't have one. But he's entitled to it. But he, you know, as I said, my one of my positives was McGuigan's performance.
On that then, Loz, you know, because I would suggest mentally, he's had to be very, very focused. Since he basically became first and only choice hooker, he's had to suddenly step into some pretty big shoes. You know, two England internationals are out. He needs to step up. And do you think just the fact that McGuigan was back and he was on the bench, do you think mentally he just relaxed in that, you know, he's probably so mentally and physically fatigued from this season. You know, it's by far and away the biggest rugby season he's ever had in his life. I definitely cut him some slack. But do you think that might be it? Do you think mentally, like you say, coming off the bench, he just lost a little bit of that mental alertness just through fatigue?
Quite possibly. I it's the sort of thing that perhaps if you could get him to be brutally honest and sit down with him, it's the only way you could actually find out and answer that question truly. I don't know what the answer is. Funny that, because I never seem to know what the answer to anything is when it comes to rugby, but as this podcast has well and truly shown up. But it's strange for someone who's been so exceptional to then be... Because let's be fair, this wasn't just a case of it was that was unlucky on the line. That first one was just really bad on me. As I said, I don't want this to come across as being critical towards him, because he's been absolutely superb. He's just, he set himself such high standards for being, what a depth we have got at bloody scrum, at hooker for next season, though, where we got two potential England hopefuls. We got an Argentinian hopeful. And then we got Seb Blake, who's played as well as any of those. Therefore, dare I say, it needs to possibly be considered as an England hopeful, because he's played as well as Singleton and McGuigan have at any stage this season.
Yeah, and I think just having played the amount of games that he's played this season, he'll go into pre-season with a lot of confidence, and actually potentially give a lot of confidence to other sort of players his age that are coming through the academy, that I've stepped up. I might not have to quite as much this season. We would hope that we don't have as many injuries next season. I would hope all these sort of young 20 somethings would all be encouraged by his and Seb Atkinson's kind of standout performances this season.
Well, this is what I was about to say, at the risk of this sounding like an end of season review. One of the main positives from this season is the amount of game time that some of our younger players have had to have in, like Seb Blake, Seb Atkinson, Jack Clement, Cam Jordan, due to the likes of Alex Craig, who just seems to be disappeared off the, whether he's injured, seriously injured.
Yeah, he's still got injuries.
He's back in 2 weeks.
Yeah. But, the hooker position, the centre position, and they've stepped up and they've had this game time. They've got valuable experience that going forward is only going to prove as beneficial for us in the long term, I think. They've all played more games than we would all have liked, not being disrespectful to their abilities. You look at someone like Seb Atkinson. Was it you, Ed, who said at the weekend in the pub after that he was 2 years ago, he was at school?
Yeah.
That, and he's played most of the season at 12 for us, and he's certainly not let us down. He's not going to get an international call up anytime soon, is he? But
I'll be honest, he's not. He's someone I know that the club. I know that Worcester rated him incredibly highly. I know that everyone at Gloucester rates him incredibly highly. And I think the benefit, as you said, Loz, it is interesting actually. Maybe it's the jam tomorrow in all of us that but what's, if we go back 3 years when we started the pod and we talk about that season, sort of the back end of that first, the back end of the one season, and then the next season where it was hard, we struggled, and we were playing a lot of kids because a lot of the senior players had drifted away or had gone or whatever. And then the following year, we finished fifth. We had a great season. It was really starting to look quite exciting. And again, this year we've had to play a lot of the kids because fringe players, because we've had so many injuries to the key players. It means, not ideally, but we've now ended up with a squad which has played a lot more rugby combined than we probably would have done if we had no injuries and they ended up playing the first choice all through the year. So that's, it gives you the confidence to think, well, look, if Mark Atkinson can't play or Chris Harris can't play, we've got someone in Seb Atkinson who can step in and do a really good job. And actually, he's probably going to be the heir to Chris Harris, if we're honest. We're bringing in a young centre in Llewellyn, who is, if you look at him stature-wise and look at the way he plays, is basically a like-for-like but younger version, maybe a bit more powerful version of Mark Atkinson. I thought was really intriguing was how well Adam Hastings had played for such a in the time that he's been out. We looked so much more confident and comfortable with the ball in hand having Hastings there. And that's not a disrespect to Santi, because Santi's had to come in and step in and do something that probably the coaches wouldn't have expected him to do. I mean, bless him. I think now Santi's played every single position in the back line with his cameo at nine. Yeah, and even then, we've managed to play a bloody game where we've lost both nines in the space of 10 minutes. So we've had to shift around and stuff. But there are lots of... I thought that for the most part, the style of rugby we played on Saturday is the what I want to see us play. I think I don't mind losing games if we're playing that style of rugby. Obviously, I don't want us to lose games, but if we lose a game to a very, very good Sale side, and at times we made Sale look quite ordinary.
I was going to say that. I was going to say exactly the same. I think, you know, Sale are now, they're solid in second.
Yeah.
They did not look like the second best size in the league.
Mm.
And whether that's because they didn't play to their fullest, or whether we didn't let them, I think probably more of the latter. I think, you know, that is testament to Gloucester's defence. We've had really good defence all season. Even though we've shipped loads of points, we seem to have had quite good defence in some perverse way. But yeah, I just think we, you know, we made Sale look pretty average. And if it, you know, it wasn't for the, if Zammit had size 5 feet rather than the 12s or whatever he's got, then we could have won that game.
It came down to, let's be honest, it came down to a couple of errors or opportunistic moments from Sale. So we look at the Ben Morgan kicking the ball down the pitch. He got a lot of grief for it. And, you know, the reason why is because Sale ran it in, ran it back and scored a try.
It wasn't a bad kick.
As I say, it wasn't. I've watched it back.
Awful kick.
No, but again, I've watched it back and you look at it and go, you look what's around him. It's a loose ball. There's not a lot on. His forwards are all behind him and to the side. If he runs into contact, he's going to get turned over with a penalty 25 metres out. What he did wasn't inherently the wrong decision. It just wasn't brilliantly executed. And then it went straight to Sale's second best player or first best player, who played it to the second best player, who's then played the third best player who scored, which is mildly annoying. And then the final try for Sale was Alex Hurl, done brilliantly. He's broken a tackle. He's gone inside. He's he's made ground. He's gone back to support. And as he's placed the ball, he's kind of knocked or nudged or whatever. The ball's come squirting out. Curry's got it, and away they go, and they score a try. It's one of those things that can happen to anybody at any point in the game. We've just been punished twice from making slight errors. And you think, the other end, you had Adam Hastings running through a huge hole, probably had a lot more time and was closer to the line than he thought, and he flies out and at the back of the hand pass to no one, and you're like,
all he had to do was fall over.
I mean, even if
surely
he
was on the line.
But even if he was short, you set the phase up and you go again. It's there's an element there. You've got people who are not used to maybe those situations this season, making the right decisions.
Not. I mean, to be fair, I thought Hastings, for someone that's been out for a
I thought he had a good game. You know,
that was
much like McGregor,
probably his only big glaring error.
Mm.
He wasn't shy. I mean, a couple of people said he was shy of contact. I mean, he's definitely not the biggest 10 in the world, and I don't think he was any more shy than he is normally.
Shy of going into contact or making tackles?
Making tackles. I think he went into contact pretty well.
You try asking him, because he's going to be pretty sore from the way he stood up to Manu Tuilagi early on in the game.
Yeah.
And Tuilagi came absolutely flat out at him, and he stopped him within a couple of yards.
He stood up
and took that tackle. And I'm pretty certain he's absolutely rot, whoever that was saying that about him not wanting to front up to tackle, because it is. It's utter rot.
I think also, again, we said this before, we've been kind of spoilt by the likes of Johnny Wilkinson and Owen Farrell, who love a bit of contact and like a good tackle. I'm not that bothered. As long as my 10 can do a job and make a tackle in defence, that's all I'm interested in.
Ford's not smashing anyone into tackle.
Exactly. Yeah, George Ford isn't making big hits. Sod off! It's such a stupid argument. You know what? They're in the team to do something in attack, and then just hold their way in defense.
Farrell doesn't tackle legally, and Johnny Wilkinson did, and he had shoulders made out of bloody wet paper bags by the end of it because he was so beaten up.
Exactly. I mean, overall, I thought it was a good summary of the Gloucester season. I think it was good in vast parts of it. But it was execution at the key time let us down. And at the end of the day, we end up coming on the wrong side of a result, which probably it's not going to make too much of a difference. I mean, it looks like Bath remarkably are going to finish in the Champions Cup, which I think if we looked at that 4 or 5 weeks ago, have seen that coming, would you?
You see, so Bath have got Saracens.
Last game of the season,
Not next week, but last
2 weeks'
game.
Time, yeah.
Now, it's at Bath.
Mm-hmm.
Saracens are already guaranteed number one.
Mm-hmm.
They've got previous to sending down the kids on the last game of season.
Well, like us last year, yeah.
But Saracens haven't got any cup games to play for. So I would suggest they will probably stack that relatively strong because
they'll mix it, won't they? They'll mix it.
You're being hopeful there, Jim.
Well, no, I think there's a couple of players that they know they can rest and will still perform.
Mm.
And there are other players that need that momentum. I think it's slightly frustrating. I think if it might be a different, if it was at the Stone X, I think Saracens might be more tempted to have a stronger squad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not very often I ask Saracens for a favour, but it would be nice if they had a stronger squad and won that game, obviously. It does seem ridiculous that after such an incredibly tight start to the season where you could, you know, kind of a couple of points was between the top six, we've now got 1-4 is set in stone with the game to go. And actually the bottom three, although Newcastle are definitely finishing bottom, the bottom four, isn't it?
Yeah.
You got ourselves, Bristol and Bath are all still fighting for that last Heineken Cup spot, which I guess makes for an incredibly exciting season that it comes down to such tight margins at the end.
And the fact that two of those teams are playing each other as well.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it would just fixtures.
Yeah. It would just be Gloucester though, wouldn't it, for us to be you could see it with 10 minutes ago, 15 points clear of Bristol. Saris have gone fully loaded in a whopping Bath, so they're out of it. We're all just about do it, and then we're capitulating. Bloody Bristol end up winning.
I think, to be honest, that what's more likely is we go down there and it's going to need like a last minute. You know, I can see us. We'll need a last minute kick or something. And on the basis of the last three kicks we've had in front of a post,
we'll decide to go to the corner to get the sixth try, which we don't need, and kick it dead.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, again, I would say, Loz, you made a really good point. I think it's only now Gloucester and Leicester who have not finished bottom. I suppose Exeter haven't finished bottom either, but Exeter weren't in the Premiership for God knows how many years. So it's only Gloucester and Leicester who are founder members of the Premiership who've not finished bottom. Although the only reason Leicester didn't finish bottom is because Saracens were automatically relegated. So
we'll consider them having finished bottom.
Yeah, they would have finished bottom.
That's the equivalent of Arsenal winning a trophy for finishing fourth each year, isn't it, under Arsene Wenger?
Exactly. Looking at the results, obviously, yes, we'd assume that Saracens are probably going to rest a few players. Bath then have got a bit of an advantage there. Bristol and Gloucester, we're separated by a point. Now, one thing I would say, any Gloucester fans who are hopeful for a win in 2 weeks' time, just bear in mind we've only won twice this calendar year. Which doesn't say a lot, really. So I'm not expecting too much. But there we go. I think, again, there were positives. If you assume that next season we're not going to have the injury list that we've had, and George Givington is going to go away in the summer and look at the game plan and we play a more attractive style of rugby, I'm confident that we will be better than we were this year. However, I think this season's been a useful way of tempering maybe expectation, whereas we all thought top four was a real possibility and a good opportunity maybe for something more. We're not going to lie here. We can't escape the truth. It's been disappointing. And obviously we've got one game to go. Hopefully we might get a bit of a might get a bit of a bonus and a glimmer at the end of it, but it's
bring on the end of season review in a few weeks, and we
exactly
can...
we can really really dissect it. We're going to pause now, move on to the other bits of which we talked about for the rest of the pod, and back soon.
This is Jamal Ford Robinson, and you are listening to the Cherry Jam Podcast.
What's that?
Okay, so we're going to talk about, first of all, social media, and really leaning on from last week. Jack Nowell got a £10,000 fine for his tweet, criticising the refereeing decision by Carl Dixon. Interestingly, though, the other players who tweeted didn't get fined because they had the sense not to specifically reference the decision. I think that's the problem here. If you've got, I don't know about you guys, that to me is where I can have a bit of sympathy for Jack Nowell, is that he's been singled out where others maybe haven't for something very similar. But I don't have a lot of sympathy in terms of, if you're going to tweet this stuff and we're going to talk about rugby values and respecting the officials, you have to. There are consequences for your actions. I don't know about what you guys think.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ed. I think it's the fine is fair and is correct, because you shouldn't be criticising a referee like that if you're a current player. Whether no matter what you think of the decision, it's not a done thing. This isn't just rugby values. This is just a courtesy for someone who's got a very difficult job and is trying his best. He's applied the letter of the law, and then you've said that it was totally correct that he should get the fine. Where it isn't fair is the fact that he's the only one who's been fined for it, in my mind. There were other people who have tweeted over that. Oh, he didn't specifically do it. But Jesus Christ, it's as clear as day what the person's tweeted about. They should be fined as well.
I just think it's strange that it was a monetary fine, and you know, it was a significant one, as we kind of mentioned earlier. £10,000 for a rugby player is a good chunk of change.
Even
someone like Jack Nowell, who, I mean, I'm not sure what he's earning at the moment at Exeter, but certainly next season he's going to be on a couple of hundred thousand, you'd think. But that's a big amount of money. Why was he fined and not banned? Is that a lot of, we don't want him to do what we did to Mike Brown, because that wasn't very nice on Mike Brown, was it? And I'm like, I'm just not aware of players being given significant fines like that.
Because maybe they're not learning the lessons from not playing. And match penalty, regardless of, none of us think as highly of Jack Nowell as a player as perhaps some of the international coaches do and some of the media do. But ultimately, he is a British and Irish Lion, and to give him a match ban penalises Exeter and their supporters for something. Whereas if you you give him a fine, you're penalising him directly.
Yeah, no, actually, I haven't thought about it that way. And you're right, Lars, because what he did, he was representing himself and maybe not representing Exeter because he was sat at home or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's
been punished. Their fans and their other players haven't, and their club haven't been punished that way, because they haven't done anything wrong. It's just him personally. I think that might be why they've gone down the fine route. Plus, also, it might be a case of, we've banned players in the past for inappropriate social media, and it ain't getting through.
Well, I mean, funnily enough, it was mentioned on Shedweb, and it has a link to Gloucester, which was Eliota Fumonisapolo, was banned for 6 months because of his comments about Nigel Owens. I'm looking at it here. So Samoa lost to South Africa in the World Cup, and he said that Nigel Owens was racist and biased, and he ended up being suspended for 6 months for rugby. But that punishment was suspended for 2 years after he retracted the comments, apologised to Owen, and served 100 hours of community work in Samoa. He was handed a three-week ban by the RFU after he criticised his disciplinary process, the Rugby World Cup and the International Rugby Board. He also criticised other players, officials, and World Rugby via Twitter.
I mean, and he criticised pretty much everyone.
Gloucester
he?
Was he criticised Gloucester around when we were renegotiating contracts, claimed that there was inherent racist and bias within the Gloucester setup at the time. And I mean,
he was a special player and he was a special sort as well, wasn't he? Let's be fair. Someone who was highly intelligent because he was a qualified solicitor, he was a bit of a bell end as well, wasn't he?
I mean, the thing is, there is an interesting point that was made, I did see, which was, you know, we should be encouraging characters in rugby and these people, and we shouldn't be putting. Now, I've got no problem in encouraging characters. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes around about Joe Marler, and I like some aspect. I do like quite a lot of aspects of Joe Marler. I think his work, particularly on mental health and getting that as a normalised conversation, is a really, really positive one. However, equally, he is also a bit of a bell end sometimes. And I think that's what people are like in real life, I suppose. I don't think you need social media, though, to enhance that. I think if you're able to, you know, he doesn't need to be on Twitter criticising officials. That doesn't add anything to it.
Yeah, well, you mentioned social media. You know, we've got our own sort of social media legend in Jamal. And he is a character. You can't say he's not anything. You know, he's a fan's favourite. Mm. All the kids love him because he is such a character.
He takes time as well, which I think is the most important thing. He takes time with people.
He doesn't just try and do something that's funny to get a quick laugh. He spends a huge amount of time engaging with fans. And he does it because he enjoys it, not because he has this obligation to as well. I do honestly feel. He obviously gets a lot out of it.
I think even though, I mean, that's the thing though. He gets it wrong occasionally. You know, I noticed there's been a few comments around this issue around Jack Nowell, and or maybe I feel that he gets it wrong. I'm not saying he gets it wrong. It's how you interpret these things. But he's been quite supportive of Jack Nowell, and it's basically, you know, stood up for him and stood by him in terms of this issue. I think that's the wrong take. Now it's an opinion thing. But again, the difference is I do think he's doing it in such a way which is he's not outright going out and criticising the referees. He's not outright going and saying this is, you know, racist or biased or whatever. I think you can do it in a way that is respectful, which I do generally think he does. And there's plenty of players who've done that. They've said they've issued statements around and put stuff out on Twitter and said, you know, don't really agree with this. I think he could have been dealt with better. That's fine. I've got no problem with that. But it's if you start tweeting about individual decisions that referees make in games, and I even say just generally about the referees, I think you are on a very slippery slope, and you don't really have a lot of defence out there. On the other side of the social media thing, though, and this is where I do have sympathy for the players, that the guys put themselves out on social media. Because fans want interactions with them and communication with them. And then you have people who purport to be Gloucester supporters sending abusive messages to the captain of the rugby club.
That's just out of order.
It's just not acceptable. We've raised it on Twitter today.
I think judging by reading it, or at least attempting to read it.
Yeah, I think he'd had a few, hadn't he?
It was clearly someone that had had a few, because just judging by the time of day,
and the total comprehension.
Yeah, I mean, God, if it was an English GCSE, then it would have been ungraded, wouldn't it?
Mm.
So, I mean, I'll hold my hand up. I've tweeted a few things while drunk and angry that, you know, I shouldn't, and I think the vast majority of people can. I wouldn't say I'd ever do it again. I think I've grown up a little bit more. And I think as a pod, I think we're pretty good now that we kind of don't tweet angry.
Mm.
We're pretty good. We don't like to do the pod too soon after a really upsetting loss. We don't mind tweeting when we're still pissed and happy, but you know, it's kind of, yeah. It is just popular culture, isn't it? It is life.
I've got a little rule to myself.
We've never had it that we can communicate with people before in that way. We keep saying you wouldn't say it to him in the pub, and actually, the joke is, at that exact moment, if Luds had walked into a bar at 10:45 or whatever it was, the Joker probably would have said exactly what he tweeted.
Yeah, because he was upset.
He probably would have said it. And Luds, being the true professional that he is, would have probably gone, oh, that's really disappointing to hear, but you know, if that's what you think, that's what you think. But
I'll be honest. I think I
don't. Well, I don't know. We don't have players smacking him. We don't, you know, I think we can kind of go back to probably not that long ago when you would have a player just smack him. But yeah, I mean, these players, they are so professional in their entirety now. They don't turn up in pubs at 10:30 at night, do they? Because,
well, not unless they've won something.
Yeah, well, and even when they have won something, you know, I don't think they celebrate with getting absolutely tanked up.
I don't know. What about Goud?
Oh yeah, well, that was good.
Alex Goud, was it 3 days on the piss? That's
yeah,
right.
Exactly. So 3 days on the piss. I'm not
in
convinced.
Full kit.
Yeah, I'm not convinced he drank that much. He can't have done.
No, true. He would be dead, wouldn't he? To be fair.
As I said, I got a certain rule which I try my best. Mm. It has been, I have broken it a couple of times, but basically, I try not to go on social media if I've been drinking.
Yeah, it's a good rule.
It clouds your judgment, and you end up the probably the worst thing is, it's not so much I go on and start spouting bollocks. I don't need alcohol to do that. I do that anyway. But what I do, it clouds my judgment, the alcohol does, when it comes to social media, because I start getting roped into arguments with idiots.
You can't argue with stupid, can you?
No, you can't. And the trouble is the more people have drunk, the more stupid they get. And then I end up biting more and look back the next day and go, I have before because I've got involved. Like Jim said, we've all done it. And I've looked back before and I thought, oh, God. And the trouble is, it's already out there, isn't it? And you can delete it all you want, which I've done, but there is still a record of it. And you just cringe the next day. And you just, so I now basically try my best not to be on it at all if I've been drinking. So that's why I don't really use social media, because I'm a raging alcoholic.
To be fair, you are drinking a pint of vodka and tonic today, so that's...
this is... Let's just clarify that point.
Right? No, I know.
Having two doubles with tonic. It's so different to having a double vodka and tonic and then just having another one after that. I've just happened to put it all in the one glass at the one time, because I'm upstairs recording this podcast in my bedroom because my wife is watching the television downstairs.
Well, I've got... Where the
vodka is.
Yeah, because that vodka is like locked away, isn't it? You couldn't possibly like move it around. No, why is it not on your sideboard right now?
Why not? Because it's in the freezer.
Oh,
where you keep vodka.
It's very sensible, isn't he? I ain't got room for vodka in my freezer.
It's just full of, I don't know what it's full of,
vegetarian ready meals.
Oh, nice. Exciting. Right, anyway, on the...
Look at Loz's face.
Oh dear. Right. Moving on. But no, I think that is a good rule, Loz, and I think that's probably a rule we should all really abide by. Don't text angry, or don't tweet angry. Don't tweet drunk. And actually, I think the world would be probably a little bit better. I mean, there's no accounting for lunatics, and there are a lot of lunatics. But I think that would certainly lessen the bile that we often see. We talked about the semi-finals briefly because we now know the four semi-finalists for the Premiership this year. Saracens at home to Northampton, Sale at home to Leicester.
That's going to be a hell of a game.
I have a funny feeling. I mean, I don't know about you. If I was going to pick a team that could do Saracens at home, Northampton would be that one team. And if I was going to say a team that's probably gearing up and has been on that sort of nice upward curve is Leicester. So it wouldn't surprise me if we saw an East Midlands derby in the final. I don't know about you guys.
There's very, very few away victories in the semi-finals. Obviously, we've been on the receiving end.
We were the first.
but I think you're right. I think Northampton blow hot and cold. They have done pretty much all season. When they blow hot, they blow very, very hot.
Yeah.
And I think if they have a really good first quarter and rattle Saracens a little bit, I think they have got a real chance. And such is rugby, you know, a red card is just one tackle away.
Although in Farrell, certainly.
I mean, I wouldn't, when we get to this point in the season, I really wouldn't like, I don't like red cards anyway, because they're a bad thing. It means someone's done something they shouldn't, and someone's potentially got an injury that they shouldn't have received. But I think there's two really, really good semi-finals. I think Sale will be probably more nervous than Saracens. I think Saracens are a confident side anyway, and I think they will. My money is on Saracens overcoming a period of play against Northampton, where Northampton are fantastic, and actually I think Leicester will do their thing and kind of grind out a bit of a win against Sale. So I think it will be a Saracens Leicester final. There's my money.
Mm-hmm. Giles, what are your thoughts?
The thing is, they see they're after Anthony Watson now. Salary cap? What salary cap? Anyway, that's a different argument. I think with the quality, where I'm going with that, with the quality they've got in their squad, if they decide they want to win something, then they're pretty difficult to beat. It's very rare they lose the big matches. They do it, but it's not too often. It's funny because you can't really read too much into the Newcastle game other than feel just incredibly frustrated that we managed to lose to Newcastle, having watched them have 60 odd points put on them or whatever it was at home to Northampton. Don't get me wrong, as you said, when Northampton blow hot, they do and half blow hot. But will they be able to do that against the quality of what Saris will do at the Stonex, fully loaded, with a final place on it, with no European distractions? It can happen. We pushed them years ago in a similar sort of position, but I'd just be surprised, to be honest with you. The Sale Leicester game, that, as Jim said, that's got the potential to be an absolute cracker, hasn't it?
Yep.
Leicester are weird because under Borthwick they won the league. This season under Borthwick they were going well. Then, with the exception of the Gloucester game, they looked shoddy once Borthwick left.
Yep.
Then all of a sudden, that's sorted itself out. They glued. They look the team that finished top of the league and went on to win the title last season again. And you really could see, as Jim said, them grinding it out against Sale in Salford and it being a repeat of last year's final?
Saturday's Leicester will be repeated.
Yeah. You could see it being a repeat of last year's final. And if that happened, you probably wouldn't actually turn around and have any qualms about it. One advantage of Gloucester not being in the top four is you can look forward to what's got potentially going to be two bloody good games of rugby and watch them with impartiality and then just enjoy them for how good a game of rugby they're likely to be.
Yeah.
I know there are going to be plenty of people who are not going to want Saris to win. I get that. I understand the reasons why from that. But
particularly want Leicester to win either.
No, I don't really want Sale to win, and I don't really want Northampton to win. Funny that, I can then keep on going and saying I'm not particularly a fan of Exeter. I don't really like Bristol, Bath, Newcastle, London Irish, or Harlequins either. So, look, The only team I want to win is Gloucester. Funny that, as a Gloucester supporter.
Yeah, no, I do agree. I agree with you, Jim. Probably more likely than not, we'll see a Sarri's Leicester final. That wouldn't surprise me. That's probably the way we're going to go. But at the same time, I think, as I said, the team I think who are probably the best prepared in the semi-final stage to do it are Northampton, just because the way they play, they score a lot of points, they concede a lot of points, but they do score a lot of points. And if you're going to beat Saracens, you're going to have to score a lot of points. And I think you've got to play attacking, exciting, aggressive rugby, and that's what Northampton are very good at. So I think that's going to mean it's going to be a very interesting game to watch. Sale are interesting in that I think they kind of the way they played against Gloucester, I think, is almost what George Skivington would want Gloucester to play like. They're very, very structured. If you notice, they didn't play a lot at all, really, Sale. They kicked the ball away a lot yesterday, I should say. And I wouldn't be surprised that they will do the same for against Leicester. So although it probably be a very, very intense game of rugby, really, and a really good game of rugby to watch if you're a purist, it's probably not going to be the most exciting game of rugby. It's probably going to be a very high standard game of rugby. Whereas I think the Saracen-Northampton game could be borderline basketball if it gets to that point.
Which is weird, isn't it? Because I get really frustrated with those sorts of games. But they are very exciting. And I think if you're not a rugby kind of traditionalist and you don't think, oh my God, this play is just so loose. You know, you can be, oh my God, it's so exciting. The Leicester game is going to be one for the purists. And I think the Saracens game is going to be occasionals.
The purists, I get the comment where you're coming from with it. And purist game, it's attritional up front, I can understand. But if you're constant, if it's a game where every time you get the ball, basically two teams who play a Gloucester game plan are kicking the sodding ball away as soon as they get it, that isn't going to be exciting. It's not going to be a game for the purists. It's going to be bloody boring. When there's an attritional struggle up front and two packs taking on against each other, and they go toe to toe, and there just aren't many points scored because of how they negate each other, but they're playing rugby, then yes, you can end up with a game for the purists that way. But you
I do think
that
the talent.
A few years ago, Gloucester versus Bath.
Bath, the 8-6 game, yeah.
8-6. It was an absolutely superb game of rugby. Mm.
I think the difference, though, is, again, and in that game, as would be for the Leicester Sale game, I think the quality of the players on the pitch dictate that. And I take your point, if you've got two teams just basically box kicking to each other, it's very, very dull. But I think that the quality you've got throughout those two sides will dictate that when if someone doesn't quite get it right and makes a mistake, you'll suddenly have it will switch on and be really exciting and really good. And it's always intriguing to see a Leicester pack that, you know, they are a very aggressive and dominant pack. We saw that at Kingsome. And it will be interesting to see how Sale cope, because I thought Sale were quite lucky against us yesterday. I think overall Gloucester had the upper hand for a lot of that game, particularly in the tight. But I think what was noticeable was when we made our substitutions, going back to the Gloucester Sale game, when we made our substitutions, the depth, that's where the depth fell away, and Sale were able to just take an advantage of our mistakes and maybe lack of experience. But it's certainly going to be an interesting finish of the season. And it kind of leads on to comments that Pat Lamb made on Rugby Tonight. Loz, I know you've got a fairly strong opinion on this, but he's saying basically that salary cap is holding English rugby back. You know, we can't compete. Well, if all you're interested and care about is winning European Cups, yes, I agree. But we've had two teams go bust this year. I'd rather have 10, 11, 12 teams that we can follow in a really competitive English league that feed into an English national side than worrying about whether we can beat the Ireland team, sorry, a Leinster team, or billionaire-backed French teams. It's nonsense.
It's very easy for the head coach of a team that's got an owner with a reported wealth of £1 billion to make comments like this.
Who are currently in ninth, by the way.
Yeah, but they're eighth, actually, yeah. but It's Barcelona.
Oh, sorry, eighth, yeah, by points
difference. Points difference. It's just, so as you've hit, well, I'm going to repeat what you said, you know, you've talked about two teams have gone bust in one season. We're talking all about sustainability, and then he comes along and turns around and says, oh, the salary cap's holding us back, we need to double it. Right, we'll double it and double all the losses that everyone's made, and then we could double the amount of teams that go out of the business, and then we can have it for Saris versus Bristol fighting for the title because they're the only two teams that can afford to do it. Christ, Leicester, who won the league last season, had to take an emergency loan out earlier this season to stop them from going bust. That was what, Exeter have had to sell off bloody land, a hotel to stop themselves from going bust. We had to sell off all of our supposed star players a couple of years ago to stop ourselves from going bust. Or, well, our players took a pay cut.
Pay cut. Yeah. Newcastle are basically getting rid of everybody left, right, and centre.
They were voluntarily looking to redeem voted because they can't afford it. There's the talk of that. London Irish have just been bought out by American owners.
They're waiting for a buyout. Yeah, I don't think it's actually been official yet.
And so. Sale of were for years were struggling, but then they got owners which aren't exactly throwing masses amount of money at the club, but they are doing okay. But they wouldn't cope if they then were to go if we were to double the salary cap. They haven't got that sort of money.
They haven't got the crowds.
They haven't got enough support to sustain what they've got.
Saracen's business model.
I think there's Leicester, Northampton, Gloucester, and Exeter, just on the fact that they own their stadia and they get decent crowds. They are the teams that can support themselves with the current kind of format. And all the other teams, because
I say Quinns, I'd include Quinns in that because
Quinns, yeah.
I think Quinns. I mean, Quinns are a weird one though because they get record turnover year on year, but still make losses, which is remarkable, really.
Yeah, but then they've also got a bit of prime land in the middle of Richmond as well, so or just on the outskirts of Richmond. So it's not exactly renowned for being a cheap area, is it?
No.
Saras have got a business model, which because who could happily double if not treble the salary cap because their business model is based on having a shitload of an owner with a shitload of money who doesn't mind losing it.
He just writes it off.
Bristol have potentially got the same, but as we said, it'd be interesting to see just how well they do if Bristol City ever get their act together and get promoted to the Premier League in football, to see just how much money that Steve Lansdowne's got spare going on from that, trying to bank
all that.
Well,
there are rumours. I mean, there are rumours, and there have been rumours this season, that Steve Lansdowne is looking to sell the rugby club and actually the whole Bristol sport model. Again, it's a very dangerous. I understand why Bristol fans might be a bit more sort of positive than I would be, but Bristol have got a habit of going boom and bust, and
yeah,
again. You look at the crowds they get; they get good crowds when they're winning. When they're not winning, the crowds drop off quite quickly. I think if Bath get their act together and sort their stadium out, that would have an impact. I think because they do have and have consistently had a really good, strong, loyal support, considering when you think that they haven't really won anything in the last 25 years. They've done really well. They generally sell out. I mean,
yeah. If I had the choice, if I lived in that area and wasn't a diehard Gloucester supporter, you go, right, do I want to go to Ashton Gate and have a nice seat in a nice state, in a nice stadium, which I can just get the ticket, or do I want to try and go to Bath and get soaked in a temporary stand if I can get a ticket?
Yeah,
with zero facilities, it's a no-brainer. So you're absolutely all right, I think, Ed. If Bath sort their shit out with their stadia, then there's a really good chance that actually a lot of Bristol support, because
they
like
would
you say,
do. Always
they're,
has.
They're quite fickle. Yes. If all of a sudden it's they've got this big new stadium and they're doing a really good deal on season tickets, you'll probably get a lot of people that just go, let's become Bath supporters now.
They've always been that. That is, it's traditionally always been the way. When Bath became successful, Bristol fan, there's suddenly the number of people who lived in Bristol who supported Bath went through the roof. And it's only recently, in the last couple of years, where Bristol have had that bit of a bump under Lansdowne, that they've actually started to take some leadership on that. I mean, the one thing I would say about the Bath experience generally, and this is obviously coming from a slightly biased place, but it was noticeable after the Bath game the other week. I had a few conversations with a few Bath fans, and every single one of them was saying, do you know what, when we come to King's Home, it's noticeable how much better the experience is at King's Home is compared to Bath. And these are hardcore, loyal season ticket holders at Bath. And they're like, you know, they don't go to many away games because it's very expensive to do that. But, you know, the two closest away games they've got are Gloucester and Bristol. And let's be honest, the experience at King's Home and Ashton Gate is a world away from what you get at the Rec. And we moan about King's Home. Right, final bits and pieces then this week. Do we have any sort of general thoughts then on Billy Twelvetree's, Ben Morgan, and the people that are leaving us for Pastors New? Obviously, Ben Morgan's mainly scaffolding. I just wanted to.
I just think, yeah, Ben Morgan, he played 80 minutes, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't believe that. Maybe it's because he's retiring, but he was just super.
Apart from the kick. Yeah.
I thought he was absolutely superb, and has been quite a bit tail end of this season. Was it Andy T kind of wanting to keep him?
Well, after La Rochelle, I think particularly the 20 minutes against La Rochelle, it was actually ridiculous, wasn't it, when he came on?
Yeah, so I think he can definitely retire, thinking he's put in a good shift as a professional rugby player.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, really, really proud to have had him playing for Gloucester, and I totally get it. Actually, I think a lot of the time players try and play on longer than they should. So he's obviously made that decision to go, and probably because he's made that decision and he's so happy in the decision, that's why his performances have been so good, because he knows, other than the odd charity vets game here and there, you know, that's him done. And I mean, is it official where Twelvetree's is going yet?
So it's not been announced by the other club, but the rumours are that both he and Geordie Reid are off to Ealing. That's been the sort of well-publicised rumours.
Yeah. And I can't knock that at all. You know, we've lost players. You know, I can think of like Willie Hines going to Worcester a couple of seasons ago because they were offering him a part coaching role and stuff like that. Not that it worked out for him, unfortunately. But you know, you say, well, that's fair enough. You know, that's something that we're not in a position to offer. He's looking out for himself in his sort of later career, and I think absolutely that's what Bill is doing. He's thinking, right, life after rugby, do I want to think about coaching? He's going to maybe dip his toe in a little bit as player coach down at Ealing. And Geordie is kind of, he obviously enjoyed his time there previously. He's going, potentially going back there. And I think actually Geordie would probably fit into that sort of being a big fish in a small pond in the championship. You know, Ealing, whether they come up or not, or go off to Wales or not, that's another story. But I fair play to him. I think they've both played well for us. You know, they've certainly not hidden away from their responsibilities in Gloucester shirts. They've tried hard, they've played hard. And best of luck to him. Some players leave and you go, good riddance to him. And absolutely, I don't think we've got players like that anymore. I think the sort of players we have and retain are the players that, if they were as young and as capable as they were when we signed them, we'd want to keep.
Yeah, I mean, we'll come on to... So just a comment on Ben Morgan. I think 100% agree that as professional rugby players, there are very few who get to retire on their own terms and to be able to just come out. You know, Ben Morgan is fingers crossed for 2 weeks' time, but Ben Morgan is about to retire from professional rugby at the age of 34 with a, you know, pretty fit bloke, and is able to retire a bit of, and realistically he's not going to have a hip replaced in the next 5-10 years.
This is the thing though, Ed, as we all know, and with what Jim was saying as well, as we all know, anyone who's played the game knows that rugby hurts, and he's had quite a few injuries. He's had a few nasty ones, and he's had quite a few of other injuries in the last few years. I'd imagine all of these are hurting. He's probably got to a stage where he's got to he's thinking, Christ, another pre-season. No, thank you. Not with my body hurting like that. I'm not at this age as well. We got players coming in, so I'm going to put myself through all that to then be behind Albert Tuasui, Zach Mercer, Ruan Ackerman, and potentially Jack Clement in the pecking order. Sorry. Yeah. And he might just think, do you know what? Yeah, actually, this ain't worth it anymore. I don't really want to step down a level. He might not have had the options to do so. We don't know, because we're not privy to that. Mm-hmm. Go out on a high, finish it on his own terms, going out, playing for his hometown club, and doing it with pride, having not had to drop down, having not dropped down a level. And I say fair play to him, because he's put in some stellar performances for us over the years. He was a hell of a player before he hurt his ankle, before or broke his leg or whatever it was, which was just before the World Cup a few years ago.
Yeah,
he really looked like he was back to his best, and that was just really unfortunate. And when he was on his top form, he was an absolutely outstanding player. With regards to the other players that are leaving, I know there's some people, oh, this is a travesty. Oh, I can't. Look, Billy's been a loyal servant to the club. He's 34 years old, for goodness sake. He ain't the player he was. He's always gives 100%. Great. I love players who are going to give 100%, and so does everyone who goes and watches Gloucester. But I also want the players to be top quality players who play for us as well. And unfortunately, he has passed his best. He is capable of the odd exceptional performance. But as over the course of the season, he just doesn't play enough to be able to say he hasn't got that in week eight anymore. And that has a lot to do with that is his age. We have players coming through, much in the same way, and this is leading on to the Jordy Reid as well, leaving.
Yes.
Going. We have the likes of Jack Clement coming through. We've also got I can't forget the name of the lad, but there was Freddie Thomas was on the bench.
We've got Harry Taylor.
Started. Yeah, the lad who was starting at open side when Ludge was out injured at the start of the season. Yeah. You've also got Josh Gray, who let's remember that Aaron Hinckley was let go a few years ago.
Yeah.
And that was on the rumour that I heard was on the basis that the coaching staff thought more of Josh Gray than they did Aaron Hinckley. And he's been off on loan getting some experience this season playing. So he'll be there or thereabouts next year. And for the other option is to keep, with the greatest respect to Jordy Reid, a journeyman Aussie who, yes, okay, he will qualify as an English qualified player now because he's been at our club for 3 years, so we qualify by residency or whatever it is. But that would be in the way of some potential players coming. We're not talking Michael Hooper here, we're losing. You know, we're talking a player is on the fringe. Yeah. And he's on the fringe of the first team.
If you've got an absolute superstar at age 30 plus, you go, right, yeah, we're gonna keep him until it's retirement time. But we've talked about it already. We've had some absolute quality because they've had to come out of our academy this season. And I think more and more we're going to see players retiring a little bit earlier with a little bit better health. I think a lot of the publicity around sort of the head knocks and stuff like that, players are realizing that actually, you know, maybe it's a 10 year career, not a 15 year career now. Mm. Simply because the conveyor belt of talent is going to only keep improving, and our academies are doing more and more work to bring those players up to Premiership standard earlier. So it doesn't, they don't have to wait till they're 25, 21, 22, maybe even 19, 20. They're good enough quality to be playing. So yeah, I think we'll probably see more players leaving, you could say, in their prime, because
especially because
they've got other business opportunities, hasn't they? I mean, you said about Ben Morgan having his scaffolding. You know, if he's got a decent company that he's going to now go and properly manage, then, you know, fair play to him. He's built that up, you know, while he's been a professional rugby player, and now it's his job to sit back and look after that.
Yeah, I mean, just a quick note though. I want to really just I'll certainly talk about Geordie Reid. I think he was a great addition for the when we think about it, a guy who stepped up from the Championship, and you know, became a fan favourite, and there is a reason for that because he was all action. And was and I think having dreadlocks does help in terms of being noticeable. But you know, he was an all action guy, and he made an impact. And I think he I think also his demeanour off the field definitely ingratiated himself with the Gloucester faithful. And you know, and it's there's elements of you don't, if you like a player and you've got supporters who really like a player, you don't want to see him go. But as you said, you can't keep everybody. There are young players coming up through the ranks. Geordie's done a great job for us, and he's going to go to Ealing. So, plus one there is he's not going to be in a competing team. We're obviously losing Jake Pelledri, which we've kind of discussed before. And again, I think that the only disappointing thing would be that Jake hasn't had another game this season, and we've not been able to say goodbye and thank you in the same way that we maybe did for Billy. Because I genuinely was. There were two moments on Saturday, which lump and throat stuff, when Billy came on the field and the entire ground stood and applauded him. And at the end, when he had the conversion, it would have been nice if he'd slotted it. But the conversion, and even the Sale players and the Sale coaching staff were getting in and cheering him and chanting for him. And I felt that was a nice example of what rugby should be about and what sport should be about. You've got a guy there who's put his body on the line for years and years and years, and embodies everything you want in a player. And Loz, I take your point with Billy that he hasn't been able to consistently do what he did four or five years ago. But I think it's fitting that probably for a lot of people, his performance in La Rochelle, I thought was one of his best performances probably ever in a Gloucester shirt.
He was outstanding.
And I think if you're going to have if we look back at a player and what they mean to a club and what they mean to a fan base, Billy has captained the side. He's captained us to win trophies, which, you know, not many Gloucester captains can say. And I think if we look at that and we say that guy has done everything he possibly could want to in a Gloucester shirt. And thank you, Billy. Really, really do mean that. We will go through and review everything again. And there's a few other players who I know probably will end up leaving. Tom Seabrook's another one who will be off at the end of the season as well. Again, thank you for his efforts. Final thing just on this pod this week. Many of you know I wouldn't say antipathy, but maybe our slight dislike of Ealing and what they stand for and the hill that many people seem to die on in terms of the promotion and relegation. So it was entertaining, if nothing else, to see Ealing lose to Jersey, and it looks like Jersey are going to win the league. So for all those who are going on about, oh, get promoted, firstly, Jersey didn't even apply. And secondly, how could you get promoted if you don't even win the league, Ealing? Got to win the league, boys. Got to win the league. Got to win these crunch matches. Yeah, sod them. Anyway... and just because Billy and Geordie are going there next season, not gonna like him. Anyway, any other thoughts on that, boys? Anyone else to add to that, or is it just me being a cat?
Bitch,
yeah.
I think it's really good that a team like Jersey, I'm not sure if they'd ever really have aspirations of being a Premiership side.
No.
I think they want to be one of the top championship sides year on year. And maybe things will change in 20 years' time because rugby will be completely different. But I think that's what you know, Hartbury are a championship side. They don't want to try and they couldn't compete with Gloucester, could they? You know, there's not enough. There's not enough people to buy tickets unless something suddenly happens and the population doubles and everyone suddenly has more money to spend. You need to do it. And I think that's where Ealing are. You know, where at Ealing can they get 10,000 people every week? Because they haven't got anything like it at the minute. So sometimes teams just need to know their place. And Bath should know their place. They should be below us in the table.
Agreed.
In all fairness, Bath have tried their best all season. We've just managed to up them on the useless stakes.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, there is a way that both Bristol and Gloucester can finish above Bath, provided Bath don't beat Saracens. Can we not arrange it for Gloucester and Bristol? So Gloucester win
a 3-point draw,
and Bristol just get a bonus point. That's fine. That's fine. No, we have to finish above Bristol, Jim. I'm not finishing below them. No. So that's a possibility. We'll do that. We'll organise it now. It's fine. We'll sort it offline. Yeah.
Are we going to Bristol for the match, Ed?
I haven't decided yet because there's that possibility. I'm being told that there are possibilities that we might be invited to a barbecue to celebrate the coronation.
It's raining.
Yeah, I'm hoping it bloody is. And I'll be honest, you know, me. Everyone who knows me as a really well-known monarchist. So yeah, I haven't decided yet. I probably need to get my act together and get it confirmed in the diary one way or the other. But we'll let you know. We'll let all our listeners know. And I think if there's a few of us down there, come and buy us a pint. That'll be nice. We've given you hours of endless entertainment.
We've given them hours of something, but I don't need to ask
you. Anyway, on that note, thanks very much, guys. Have a good week. We will be back next week, although what I'm going to be talking about, I don't know, because I'm in Prague over the next weekend, so God knows what rugby I'll be seeing. If not, we'll be definitely back in 2 weeks to talk about the end of season. Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
Cheers.